Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Amplify Baltimore is back in the studio, and we have that means we have April Yvonne Garrett, founder and president of Civic Frame, with us, along with several of her presenters for the event taking place we'll be talking about. Laura Fox is in the studio. She is the co-coordinator of Baltimarket for the Baltimore City Health Department. We'll learn more about that in a moment. Krista Carlson's with us, Food for Life educator at Hampstead Hill Academy on the east side of town. And Leah Shiflett joins us by phone, who is a customer of Baltimarket. And ladies, welcome. Good to have you all here with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, April, what did you cook up now?
Oh, you
no
know
pun intended.
I love
we're talking
being
about
in a kitchen. Well, for our third session, I thought it would be really timely and important for us to have a conversation about neighborhoods, homes, and building community, as well as access to food, local food, and urban farming. I'm excited that we're going to be having that conversation today, specifically on this show, about access to food, given the fact that it's blazing hot outside, but we're also in a season where we're opening up our farmers markets and people are going to be paying more attention to being outdoors and connected with the earth. And this is a really hot time right now for urban farms as well. So we wanted to do that in the June session so that we would bring some attention to things that people could participate in during the summer months and increase their awareness about their access to food and interesting ways in which we're incorporating local food and urban farming into our daily eating habits in Baltimore City.
That may be good for you to both of you at this moment, Chris and Laura, just to describe a bit about what it is you do and then bring Leah in to talk about why she does what she does with Baltimarket.
So I'm Laura Fox. I am the Baltimarket Virtual Supermarket Program Coordinator, and this is a Baltimore City Health Department program where Baltimore residents can place their grocery order and pick it up at their local library in the very neighborhood that they live in. The virtual supermarket has four sites located throughout the city, one at the Orleans Street Library in East Baltimore. We have two in Southwest Baltimore at the Washington Village Library and at George Washington Elementary School, and one at the Cherry Hill branch of the library. So residents throughout Baltimore can place their orders anytime, anywhere, on any computer, and just come to their library and pick it up at a designated time. You can find out all the information on baltimarket.org for how to order them from home.
And this is, well, we'll get back to what this is in a moment, Krista.
I run the Food for Life program at Hampstead Hill Academy, which is a pre-K through 8 public charter school in East Baltimore. We're just off Patterson Park. We're a charter that's operated by the Baltimore Curriculum Project, and we're a conversion charter, which means we serve the intact community. We're a zone school as opposed to one that accepts students from around the city, which I think is an important detail if you're really going to be trying to build a holistic program that integrates families and the community. So every student in our school receives in-school food and nutrition education classes that's really structured around engaging their senses in sampling, preparing, and experiencing novel, healthy foods. But the program also includes after-school clubs, including a garden club, which manages our organic school garden. We have a culinary arts club, which prepares dinners for up to 150 members of the school community. Parent workshops, as well as just getting out there and getting the community's attention on healthy food and opportunities to get their hands on it and get it in their mouths.
So before we push on the Amplify Baltimore a bit, I want to really kind of focus a second on the Baltimarket idea, just to get people to understand what this
Absolutely
is.
Absolutely, so important.
We have Leah Shiflett, one of the people who takes advantage of this, mm-hmm. on the phone with us. So if I understand, this is where people can order their food. It comes from Santoni's.
Yeah, so
right?
Yep, all the groceries come from Santoni's Supermarket, a great local Baltimore supermarket.
Family-owned. In-city, right?
Exactly.
Rob's the best.
Yeah, you know, they have a great butcher department, great big produce department, also really competitive prices, which are great for a low-income Baltimore community as well. So what this program really is, it's a food access program. So what we're trying to do is give people who don't have access to healthy, affordable foods in their very neighborhoods, either from, you know, generally a lack of a grocery store in their area, the same opportunity to buy the healthy and affordable foods that someone else in a neighborhood that has a grocery store would be able to buy.
So, Leah Shiflett, how's it work for you?
It works great. You know, I get my fresh lettuce and tomatoes by just walking in the neighborhood instead of having to go someplace.
So, how does it literally work for you? What do you do?
Well, I go and order my groceries. I get my vegetables, my fresh vegetables, which I love, and then I pick them up on the designated time, and I just walk to the library, which I would do anyway.
So when you do this, I mean, what is the closest place for you to buy groceries?
Well, I would have to go to downtown. There's a Super Fresh, I think, is one out. That was downtown. But I like the San Tony's fresh vegetables and things. and I like their pick five for $19.99 meat. That steaks were wonderful.
There we go.
Yeah, so all the sales that are in-store are also online, and you can use with the program as well. So we kind of have two different models. You can either come down to the library at designated times, and we can help you place your order right there. So if you don't have a computer at home or you don't feel comfortable placing your own order, if you've never really used a computer before, that doesn't limit you from using the program. We can help you place your order. Or if you have now a computer at home, your work, your child's school, you can just go right on in there and place your order online.
So I'm just curious, Leah, how far away do you live from the closest supermarket you described?
Well, I would have to drive or catch the bus,
and
I don't have a car.
Aha!
So I walk.
So how far away is it? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, I don't really know. I know it's over a couple miles.
You were just saying, someone was just sitting here.
I don't know.
Laura, you were saying that you think it's 4 miles?
No, the Super Fresh is a little over a mile from the library. So I think from where you live, Ms. Schiff, it's probably closer to 2 miles or so.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know really.
So this is an issue in the city.
Absolutely.
About distance from places where you can buy really decent food.
Sure.
You can always go to the corner store and buy a bag of chips and some canned food.
Wait a minute. You can go to the corner joint and get a chicken box, a half and half, and some Western fries, salt, pepper, ketchup.
That's right.
And, you know, one of the reasons why this was such an important conversation to have is, as everybody knows, I was born in Westport and my grandmother still lives there. And she has a challenge with that. We just took a tour last week of Cherry Hill. They have a challenge with accessing really healthy, fresh food. And, you know, even though they're a stone's throw away from Brian Leggett's farm and all of that, they still don't really have direct access to that in those communities. And so it's really important.
They're not selling to those communities,
exactly.
Right?
They're selling directly to
restaurants
and such. And so for folks in those communities who have a desire to eat, I mean, my grandmother is from the South and she has, you know, a garden in her backyard. But, you know, the market that used to be there, it used to be an A&P and it turned into a Giant. And then as the demographics of those neighborhoods, you know, shifted over time, those businesses said, this is not a good investment for us, and they took those markets out. And so for them to have to really spend an entire day, especially if you're in the older population or if you're in a population that's never been exposed to eating well, right, it can be a really challenge, a big challenge to health issues, some of the health disparities that we're seeing in inner city and urban communities. And it's so important that we get the word out about some of the alternatives. When I talked to Rob Santoni about this, he's a very big advocate for this. He talked about there are going to be pop-up stores coming across the city, like the Milk and Honey store and some other stores across the city who are really committed to making sure that we connect with those communities and make sure they have quality meals and food access to them.
So it seems to me that, I mean, the issue that we're all wrestling with here is the question of whether we can live sustainably in this community and actually grow food and eat it and actually be part of a food system that works. Now, I mean, I think we can kind of explore that a bit. I mean, because it could be, some people might look at that, you're about to say something, so you hear what Chris said, is that it's pie in the sky. It's not going to happen here.
Well, I think that urban farming ventures and urban gardening can be designed in a way that it meets all sorts of different goals. And food production can be one of those goals, but that's definitely not the case with many of the urban gardening ventures that are going on. I mean, there's all sorts of educational opportunities. The point of the garden at Hampstead Hill is to have the kids have an amazing, you know, eye-opening experience about where real food comes from. And then maybe the next thought is that, well, but then where do those Funyuns come from? And maybe I don't trust those as much. And to demonstrate to families some things that they can do in their backyard in a small space to grow some vegetables. But our purpose there is not production. A limited number of kids that are in the garden club take home a bag of produce each week, but it's never going to be, you know, some of the kids think all the food that we use in our classes comes from the garden. That's not possible. And there's lots of other goals. There's micro-enterprise. But I think that looking at urban agriculture as part of a network of sustainability, food system sustainability actions is sort of more appropriate than looking at them as being ever really being a major bulk source of food in cities. But it's all about creating those connections to make that extra effort that it takes to get healthy food. So if people are connected to this kind of food, they're going to go out of their way to do it. And at this point, it takes you know, even what Ms. Shiflett is doing, it's not having to go as far as the grocery store, but she still has to make the effort, extra effort to place her order and get their food compared to going to the corner store and getting the bag of chips.
Right, so. Which are easy to get. So places like Baltimore Market, that the city runs, which I think is a great idea, is it always meant to be tied, and stuck is the wrong word, but tied to Santoni's? I mean, is the idea to kind of broaden it out to include farmers markets, people who are growing groceries around here, not just in a supermarket?
So I think eventually, as the program grows, we still consider this a pilot kind of stage of the program. We've only been in existence about a year, and we're making lots of headway. I think eventually it'd be great to tie in delivery times to farmers market times so that people, while they're going and picking up their other groceries that you can't get at a farmers market if you needed some cooking oil or you needed some rice that you couldn't necessarily get at an urban farm, it could kind of be a one-stop shop if you want to do some local urban agriculture as well as the big box store. You know, we see the virtual supermarket program as a health equity program, meaning that everyone in every neighborhood should have the same access to this healthy and affordable food.
You know, one of the things I wanted to say is that when I visited my friend Matt Hornbeck, who's the principal
at Hampstead Hill.
Yes, a dear friend, City College graduate.
I brought some pencils for you, Mark.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Really, that's cool. That's cool. You had to say he was a city grad.
Yeah, of course I had to say he was a city grad. But, you know, when he gave me a tour of the school, I was amazed by what he had done. But then he took me into the cafeteria, and the first thing that I saw was a ton of boxes of clementines. And I'm like, what is this all about? And he's like, you know, every day the parents come in and they work with Krista, and they have fresh fruit in their classroom. So if the kids want a snack, they can have fresh fruit. And I'm like, that's revolutionary. But then all of a sudden my nose was just like enraptured with the smell of spices. I'm like, okay, what is going on in here? Because, you know, we didn't have this at City. I mean, I love City. We didn't have this. And so he told me about this program. And so what struck me about it is, as a part of the educational process, we are giving the kids and their parents an expectation of, this is how we can introduce you to healthy eating habits. These are the expectations you should have. You should have a knowledge about, where does your food come from? What kind of impact does the food have on your body? Does it matter if that food came from down the street or around the corner or in your state? And, you know, I went to a college in Ohio where we are locally sustained. And so, you know, I put a picture on Facebook where we have on the wall at the cafeteria, this is where your food came from, and it's all from within the state. And so there are, I know there are models that are happening all over the country where people are really starting to think about how we can do that and save more energy, save our planet, and to be a lot healthier.
Maybe I wonder about this. Leah Shiflett, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm curious about your neighborhood, people around you, and where they get the food and how they eat and what you see people diets, like kids and adults and seniors as well. I mean, what do you see in your own world?
Well, when I talk to people about going to the library, one lady said, well, she goes like to a grocery store, and then she gets somebody, a hacker, what do they call it, to bring her home, and she has to pay for that. Uh-huh. And such. And this way, if you go to the library, you know, the health department covers that delivery charge. Mm-hmm. But the people around me, I've talked to them and such, but I see them coming and with taking bags of groceries out of their trunks of their car because they have to get everything at one time, you know, because they have to pay to somebody to bring them home, you know?
Right. You have to get a hack to pick you up.
Yeah, gotta get a hack.
Gotta get a hack. Nothing is a hack, so we got to make a living too. But
that's right. But still, you know, that cuts into their grocery bill.
Right.
Right.
So I wonder what all of you envision could be really, how you would envision a transformative city. How would you envision what it could be like?
An amplified Baltimore.
Go ahead, girl.
Well, I'll let them start because you're working.
Because we can let you amplify here in a minute.
Oh gosh, wow. I think that a lot of times when you talk about improving the health outcomes specifically for youth, there's sort of this dichotomy between whether it's a public health issue that we kind of have to, mm-hmm. you know, create the policies that, you know, put the right food in the right place and at, you know, the right foods at the right eye level with kids, versus whether it's a nutrition education question. And obviously, it's both, and it's a little bit of a dog chasing its tail. I sometimes struggle with seeing my students who we've had this great, great time making our pea puree on crostini with fresh herbs from our garden, and they're just ecstatic about it. And then the next thing I see is they walk out the door and they get a Rockstar energy drink because it's there and because sugar tickles all of the right, sensory receptors in your brain. So it obviously has to be both. So I just would like to see greater and increasing synergy between those sort of two arenas, which sometimes have spun in our own circles, between the policy and what's driving what people are able to put their hands on with at the right price and with the right, appropriate effort, and then knowing what to do when you get it home, and being willing to put the extra effort out it takes to prepare foods from scratch, and seeing those rewards. It's a really tough thing to do. I mean, specifically only from education, because I tell my students, it's like putting your seatbelt on. It's something you do to protect your own health, but it's like saying put on your seatbelt because you might get in an accident, and 10 years from now you'll fly through the windshield. So making that connection is tough. So that's where I think the policy parts have to come in. And I think with having Holly Freistadt, mm-hmm. having a food policy director, a lot of that synergy is starting to happen. But the more that the two sides, the front lines and the policy, can continue to communicate, the better off we'll be.
In my mind, an ideal kind of food environment for Baltimore, we all talk about how Baltimore really is a city of neighborhoods. And I think we should really hone in on that in many ways, that you should be able to go in your neighborhood, go to a corner store and be able to get a healthy option. You should be able to easily get to and from a grocery store that might not be too far away and get, healthy and affordable foods, as well as taking some of our vacant lots and turning them into, the urban gardens and farms that we have. And it's great that the city, with the planning department, we're going to have the urban farmers being able to come into the city to take advantage of this in the different neighborhoods. So, again, just kind of what you were saying, too, we do need to change some policies to make it easier to bring healthy options into the city as well.
Yeah, I think that, for the folks who are actually doing the work, and the vehicle that we've created through Amplify Baltimore is to really expose people to the folks who are doing the work. We are never short on talent in Baltimore. And with every session and every topic that we've chosen, there are people who come on that panel and people are like, you have the biggest panels, but I could really fill up my panels 10 times over because there are so many people who are engaged in these issues. And this food access and local food and urban farming panel is no... it is absolutely in line with that. One of the biggest takeaways I hope folks get from the discussion that will ensue on that day is that you can be an active agent of change in your own community with regard to this. You can start to ask businesses to carry more fruits and vegetables that are healthy. If they're not, you can start to report them. You can start to have conversations with your family. I remember when I moved back from Boston, having really interesting conversations with my parents and my grandparents about, what are you eating? What is this doing? I want you around when and if I ever get married. And so in order for you to get there, I'm 40, I ain't there yet. But in order for you to get there, I need you to change how you eat. And so it took me sitting down with them and bringing them over and saying, I got to introduce you to something that you might not have thought about before, and will you try this? And they love it. And so I see the ways in which, we've taken out a ham hock and we put in, some kind of chicken stock instead, and those small changes and how they feel, or saying, you might want to look at Trader Joe's as an option, and these are the things that they have to offer, as opposed to always going to this store or the dollar store, because that's a big thing in communities. People think they're saving money, and then you got to look at the sales receipt and say, you're not really saving money, and if you go here, this product or whatever is cheaper. But just getting them to be a little bit more literate when it comes to food choices and where the food's coming from and the impact that it'll have on their family and their future generations. There are a lot of people who have incredible health problems in their communities that are completely correlated with how they eat, in addition to some of the other stressors. And I think there are so many people engaged in this work who really have, palatable solutions that are going to be accessible to people. I think they're going to be really delighted by what they will learn on Saturday.
Part of this is also, it seems to me, it's probably difficult to tackle here at this moment, but is also this a political question and a social question about whether or not what we're going to invest in how we eat. By that I mean, is the United States of America, Baltimore City, the state of Maryland, going to invest in infrastructure to allow us to eat sustainably and locally? I mean, that mm-hmm. is part of the issue, because, you know, you can bang on the door all day long and tell somebody to sell lettuce instead of selling potato chips. But when you have farmers, when you have all this vacant land in Baltimore that's been sitting around doing nothing for years and just sits there until some maybe, you know, wealthy developer says, I'm going to develop it and then nobody moves in.
Right, really.
But you have this empty land that could be used,
sure,
partially, probably like it could be used for farming. Mm-hmm. Used to feed the city.
Well, we've got to educate folks that that is at all possible, first of all, and also give them the skill set to be able to go in there, start those gardens, and maintain them. So there, you're right. There has to be an infrastructure that says we are making a commitment to this. And I know they're doing this, and Park Heights community, I know Willie Flowers and his organization, they're doing really interesting work around that and doing it with one garden at a time. But also, it's an education, because you're taking a community who never even thought about doing this into a realm where this is not only possible, but look at what it's producing, look at what you can take home from this, and look at the impact that it's having on not just the community at large, safety issues, but the beauty of the community, how it's reshaped how you see your neighborhood, how you see where you live, and again, a local food source.
I was just out on Friday at the Whitelock Community Farm, mm-hmm, which is in Reservoir Hill, and
yeah,
in a year has just developed into an amazingly beautiful space, a completely volunteer run, and are now in the process of, they have a Friday and Saturday farm stand, and then they're going to be participating in the Druid Hill Farmers Market, which kicks off for the very first time tonight, at 3:30, 7:30.
Yes.
That's right, over the conservatory.
Right, mm-hmm, yeah.
On Wednesday night.
Right, so... But that, I think that if you are able to get the energy and have the wherewithal and the knowledge from within a volunteer group, that can grow and can become sustainable, I think, a little bit more easily than if you go in with sort of like, here's my bottom line, and
right,
I'm going to have a farmer and,
yeah,
two farmhands,
mm-hmm,
and this is what we need to support, because you have to be flexible when you're working with, you know, when you're farming by committee, it's
right,
it's gonna have to, mm-hmm, to roll with the punches, and it's all an experiment. Every year's the first year when you're farming, and then particularly when you're and particularly when you're doing it in urban soils, and you're relying on community energy, and you just have to be willing to be adaptable with it. So that's why I think these community grassroots driven projects, you know, you can define your success as you go,
and it has to fall on the people in those communities as an incredible opportunity. And if it's not falling on them in that way, it's going to seem like more of a challenge. So I think the people who are doing really great work, they're showing them, this is an opportunity for this community to really flourish in this way, and you can be a part of it. And that's what makes it an exciting movement for the city to be a part of, and for the people of Baltimore to really support, I think.
So what are you, April, Yvonne Garrett, want to see come out of this thing on Saturday you're doing, the Amplify Baltimore? What do you want to see come out of a session like this? The other session's on housing,
sure,
right? What do you want to see come out of, let's say, this session on food?
You know, the whole push behind Amplify Baltimore is for us to start to language ourselves in a very different way. Baltimoreans have a tendency to say, these are the 10 things about the city I don't like, and these are the problems, and these are the issues, and I think these are the people who are supposed to do something about it. So, first of all, it's sort of a change in how we language ourselves and how we see ourselves. We are creating the space and holding the space for people from different walks of life in Baltimore to come and have this conversation about this weekend, about neighborhoods, homes, and building community and access to food, local foods, and urban farming. So our goal is to give people an understanding of where we have been in the past with regard to this issue, where we are now, what are the progressions, but to also imagine a city that's amplified in these areas and to say, here are some wonderful things that are happening within the community. These are the people who are doing it. These are the organizations that are doing it. This is how you can have access to them. And encouraging them to become active agents of change. So we can have a conversation all day long, but we hope to inspire in people to go to the next step, to go to the next level, to say, you know, I want to start an urban farm in my community. Or actually, I want to go to this community, see how this urban farm works, and invest some time. Or I want to start, you know, patronizing. don't patronize.
Don't patronize me.
I want them to start patronizing some of the local the food markets that are here, and the farmers markets. I mean, people are starting to talk about them more. When you start to see, you know, folks who would rather go to the corner store than to go to the farmers market start to talk about, oh, on Saturday they have a farmers market and this is where it is. We are making progression so that people realize that this is not just you know, something that's accessible to people in certain zip codes or a certain class or of a certain educational background, it's accessible to everyone. So with regard to these conversations, we're always trying to get people from different walks of life to be present with one another and to the concerns that we all have that affect the city. It might affect some people at a different level more acutely, but to increase empathy and compassion so that when we're thinking through it, be it, you know, by what we give our money to or even be it by what we do at the ballot box, that we're thinking about how we want to enliven and embolden a community where even those people who don't necessarily live with us or live next to us can come up in a way that, that will allow the entire city to flourish.
So, again, tell us just as we conclude about Saturday, how to get there, what's happening, what you're going to do.
Got it. So Saturday is our third session of Amplify Baltimore. It's at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and that's located 1700 Mount Royal Avenue. And it is free.
Right by the light rail stop.
Right by the light rail, right by North Avenue. People come. There's ample parking on the street always, so there should be no excuse. You get a free lunch.
Get a free lunch?
Free lunch. Free lunch. And so our first session starts at 10, and we'll be talking
What's
about...
What's for lunch? I'm just like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's always good. It's always good. Nice sandwiches. And so our first session starts at 10 o'clock. Like I said, we'll be talking about neighborhoods, homes, and building community. We have an amazing panel for that, including former NFL player and Baltimore native Keon Carpenter, Karen Forbes from the Maryland Department of Housing, Karen Griffin from St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center, Earl Johnson, I'm excited about him, from One Green Home at a Time. Love that that initiative in the Oliver community, and the president from and CEO of Habitat for Humanity, Michael Mitchell. And so we've got Paul Brophy from Live Baltimore. We've got a whole bunch of folks on that panel. And again, that is really talking about Baltimore, like you said, a city of neighborhoods. We're crazy about our neighborhoods. We love our homes. How do we build communities that we want to live in, that we want our kids and our seniors to flourish in, that we want to come home to? So that's a very important piece. And then we're going to have lunch. And then after that, we're going to have this exciting program from 1 until 3, Access to Food, Local Food, Urban Farming. We're going to have Krissa, and we're also going to have Molly Shattuck, who is wonderful. I love Molly because she's like a ball of energy. She's the oldest cheerleader for the Ravens ever. She became a Ravens cheerleader at 38, and now she's doing wonderful work around being a healthy food ambassador with United Way. Patricia Waddy, very important. She runs WIC programs through Johns Hopkins, and she's going to talk to us. And I don't know if you guys have seen the article that just came out in Baltimore Sun about what the possible cut in WIC funding would do to the people of Baltimore. Somebody you've had on your show before, Denzel Mitchell, who has Five Seeds Farm, Ann Palmer from Johns Hopkins, the Eating for the Future program, and Pat Costello from the library. And, of course, Rob Santoni from Santoni's Market will be joining us as well. And I can't stress enough how important it is that we have people who feel like, you know, this is their space. We are creating the space for the people of Baltimore. So I want my grandmama and them from Westport to interact with my friends who live in Roland Park and my friends who live in Canton, and my mama to come from Northeast Baltimore. Everybody should feel comfortable coming in this space. And also, this is an unfunded initiative. I need to say that. We don't have major donors. We don't have any of the philanthropic community that's written major checks. We do have some support that we've gotten from the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, NeighborWorks, St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center, President's Roundtable, and the like. But this is an unfunded initiative. So if people really want to see these programs continue, I ask them with all earnest love and gratitude to make contributions to this as well. You can visit our website, civicframe.org. That's CIVICFRAME.org. You'll get more information there. You can register there. It's really important that you register so we know you're coming. You can just click on June 4th and register there. And if you want to donate, there's a donate button there as well. And we appreciate all that you're doing to help us amplify the city that I grew up in, that I was born in, that I absolutely adore and love, Baltimore.
Avery Von Garrett, founder and president of Civic Frame, this weekend, Amplify Baltimore. I want to thank our other guest, Krissa Carlson, for being here today, Food for Life educator at Hampstead Hill Academy, and Laura Fox, co-coordinator of the Baltimore Market, Baltimore City Health Department, and Leah Shiflett, who takes advantage of Baltimore Market as a customer and shows what can happen. Thank you all for being here, and see you all Saturday.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks so much. Great. Thanks a lot.